The form is like the waves in the ocean. The qualities are like the small waves. You know, in an ocean you get the big rollers, the big waves. But there are many little waves also. And the pastimes are like the interaction of the big waves and the little waves within the ocean. So it's all within the name. That's why in Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya embraced this verse, Hariar Nam, Hariar Nam, Hariar Nam Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva 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 Gatir Anyata. In this age of Kali, there is no other way than chanting the holy names. And it is only from that that further realization springs. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Manus are the presiding deities of the human species. That's where this term man has come from. Manu. We are the descendants of Manu. Yeah. There are 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. We are in the lifetime of the seventh right now. Yeah. So they are presiding over the human species. Yeah. Purusha. Well, in this context, Purusha refers to a person who reproduces. Yeah. So Purusha avatar means those avatars which are causing the material world, yeah, like that, injecting the living entities into the material nature. That's Mahavishnu. Then releasing the living entities into each universe, that's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Then supervising the living entities when they're in the universe, that's Shiradakshaya Vishnu. So Purusha indicates that they have that potency of producing the living entities and then supervising the living entities. The question is, do these 64 attributes or activities of Radharani as manifestations of the pleasure potency, are they specifically related to Krishna's 64 qualities? Not as far as I'm aware. But Krishna also has exactly the same 64 abilities. If you read in the Krishna books or 10th Canto Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll read how when Krishna went to the school of Sandipani Muni, he learnt the exact same 64 things. Yeah. But in terms of, you know, like the specific 64 qualities of Krishna, I'm not aware of these 64 attributes being like intimately related one by one with each other. I don't think so. It's like that. So we can understand the Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of everything and everything. Don't think so, it's like that. So we can understand the Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of everything and everyone in the spiritual realm. But specifically, there is Krishna's body, there is the Vaikuntha planets and Goloka Vrindavan, those actual planets. Then here is mentioned, what was it, the boundary walls, I think, of the Vaikuntha realm. Yeah. Then the jewels. Yeah. And it's interesting, very interesting thing actually, that the Brahma Jyoti is blue. It's blue. Prabhupada mentions that on a few occasions. The Brahma Jyoti is blue. Why? Because Krishna's body is blue. And The sky is blue. Why? Because it is the Brahma-jyoti, covered by matter. But still it maintains the blue color of Krishna. Isn't that interesting? I found that very interesting. Prabhupada talks about this on a number of occasions. Why the sky is blue? Because it's like a perverted reflection. It's not really a perverted reflection. It is actually the Brahma-jyoti, but it's covered by matter. So it's not exactly not precisely the same, but, you know, there's some basic similarity in its blueness. And that's why when you look on the cover of the first canto Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, it's got the Vaikuntha realm, it's blue. Yeah, because it's blue. It's a blue effulgent. You know, that means life is going on in the Vaikuntha world. That's what it is. You know, in the Vaikuntha world, you know, the Sundani is prominent because the planets are there and the people at their bodies are there. Their Krishna consciousness is prominent. Their ecstasy is prominent. So all three are prominent. Yeah, but when one becomes sort of particularly prominent, then we would recognize that it's manifestation in that particular form. But otherwise, you know, normally they are just manifest in their normal way, equally. And that means life is going on in the kingdom of God. When a person reaches bhava, then the samvit and hladini potencies are particularly prominent. The sundani potency is not as prominent. Yeah. And, I mean, I didn't really get into it because I thought it might have been too much of a detail. In verses 32 to 35, there's some mention of that. The ananda and the chinmaya. Consciousness and ecstasy. When consciousness, that spiritual consciousness and ecstasy, sundani and hladini manifest in a devotee, then the devotee becomes a very advanced devotee. Yeah. So those two are more important for the devotees, practicing the devotees. Sundani, well see, sundani would be manifest in the manifestation of the devotee's spiritual body. But, you know, like at this point, we haven't, to my knowledge, none of us have got our spiritual bodies manifest. But we are experiencing some consciousness of Krishna. And we're experiencing some bliss in Krishna consciousness. So these are the more prominent features of the Shuddha-sattva in the devotees within the material world. And generally, you know, it's only when their spiritual bodies manifest that the actual sundani part starts to become prominent in their lives. You follow what I mean? Yeah. Is it in one of these verses or... There is some discussion of it, how Krishna's body is blue. I can't remember where I saw it. I was just reading it today. Oh yeah, okay. In text 38, at the bottom of page 74, the form Shama, when he says the form Shama, he's basically meaning the color Shama, is not the blue color visible in the mundane world, but is the transcendental variegated color affording eternal bliss and is not visible to the mortal eye. So Shama, this blackish blue color of Krishna, is something very extraordinary. Sometimes it's compared to a new monsoon cloud. I read one nice description I think it was by Raghava Goswami in his Krishna Bhakti Ratna Prakash. He says that Krishna is the sum total of everything, including all colors. Not that he's the sum total, but within him is the everything is incompleteness, including all color. So he says that when you mix all colors together, I mean, you could try it and see, you get a color which is almost black, but it's not exactly black. It's almost black. And you can try it. You get, you know, a whole lot of colored pencils or paints or whatever. Mix them all together. You get this color which is blackish. So he says, this is Shama. But then again, it cannot be understood in precisely those terms, because it's an extremely transcendental state, this Shama state. As far as explaining why Krishna is that, anyway, he gives that explanation, Raghava Goswami. But you know, we would say that it is Krishna's, you know, independent desire to be that color. So we will let him be that color and not question him too much about it. Because then his immediate first expansion is Balaram, who is totally white. Not white like many of us here in the room, because we're not really white, but actually white. Yeah, actually white. I don't know. I've not heard it really presented in those terms. Yeah. I've not heard it. I mean, one, we shouldn't speculate. I mean, you could say Sambandha is more to do with knowledge, and Abhideya, you know, is more to do with bliss, and Prayojana means you reach the completion of existence. But I've never, you know, read of it really in those terms. Bhupad Kedai. Vaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're moving on today. We're going to try and cover quite a few verses today. We're going to try and go from verse 43 to verse 52. It's a subsection entitled, Krishna is the Supreme Lord of all Lords. We just heard how Krishna is the basis of all existence, the source of all the different types of incarnations, basis of Brahman, support of material nature, and how one can come closer to him through remembrance and cultivation of remembrance, through chanting the holy names, and through the holy names realizing the form of the Lord, within the form his qualities, and how the qualities are demonstrated in the pastimes. So now this section, subsection from 43 to 52, is talking about different levels of existence and how Krishna's level is the highest, and then different deities, the deities of the particular levels mentioned in verse 43 initially, and then various other deities, important deities, and how Krishna is the Lord of all these deities. So, an interesting section, some interesting discussions about Durga, Lord Shiva, but due to our little bit lack of time, we'll have to proceed through a little quickly, I'm afraid. Let's start with text 43. We can say it responsibly. Goloka namni nicha damni talecha tasya. Devi Mahesha Haridama Suteshu Techo. Tete Prabhava Nichaya Vihitas Cheyena. Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Lowest of all is located Devi Dham, the mundane world. Next above it is Mahesh Dham, abode of Mahesh. Above Mahesh Dham is placed Hari Dham, the abode of Hari. And above them all is located Krishna's own realm, named Goloka. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who has allotted their respective authorities to the rulers of those graded realms. So here there are four levels mentioned, four levels of planetary system. Devi Dham, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says in the purport of text 43, that Brahma is looking up, that Brahma, looking up to the higher position of Goloka, is speaking of the other realms from the point of view of his own realm. So his realm is this Devi Dham. He is at least within it, within Devi Dham. That means the material world. All the planets within the material world, including Brahmaloka, they're all part of Devi Dham. Then Mahesh Dham is higher. And above Mahesh Dham is Hari Dham. Hari Dham means the Vaikuntha planets. And then above the Vaikuntha planets is Goloka. Goloka Vrindavan, which is Krishna's personal realm. It is interesting about this Mahesh Dham and the whole subject of Lord Shiva, his abodes, different forms of him, and where these forms and these abodes fit into the scheme of things. This is really quite intriguing. Lord Shiva's abodes, plural, there's a number, they are above Devi Dham. Means they're above Brahmaloka. And within the material world, you can't go higher than Brahmaloka, really. So, Mahesh Dham, or the abodes of Lord Shiva, they are not really in the material world. But then above them is Hari Dham, the Vaikuntha realm. So in other words, Lord Shiva's abodes are not really in the Vaikuntha realm either. So where are they? What is left? We don't really know of anything else. Are they in the Brahma Jyoti? Actually, just like Lord Shiva is in a special category of his own, and all his different forms also, they're in categories, they're in a category of his own. So his abodes are like that. His abodes are like that. In the purport of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, about six lines down, next above Devi Dham is located Shiva Dham, one portion of which, called Mahakala Dham, is enveloped in darkness. Into penetrating this portion of Shiva Dham, there shines the Sada Shiva Loka, full of great light. So the basic idea is that Lord Shiva's existing on different levels, the different forms of Lord Shiva. Already we talked about Shambhu. He's the glance of Mahavishnu. And then Shambhu is existing within the greater material energy as the overall presiding deity of false ego within the entire material creation, associated with the original form of Durga, who's the original mother of all of the whole material creation, basically. And then we heard how Shambhu manifests as Rudra. You remember that? And it is actually that Rudra who is worshipped as Lord Shiva within this universe. He is a member of that Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And he's the presiding deity of the mode of ignorance within this universe. So we have Shambhu. We have Lord Shiva, as we know him within this universe. And then we hear in Srimad Bhagavatam, if I remember correctly, it's the third canto, how when Lord Shiva appeared, that was the time that Lord Brahma asked the four Kamars to procreate, but they refused. They wanted to remain celibates and just focus on their spiritual lives without getting sidetracked. So Lord Brahma became very angry because he had manifested them specifically for this purpose of procreation. So his anger came out from between his eyebrows, and that is the Lord Shiva we've just been talking about, who is the famous and popular Lord Shiva of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. But when he came out, then 11 other forms of himself came out from him. That's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they started destroying everything. But then Lord Brahma, if I remember correctly, Lord Brahma preached to them that they should do penances and they will get their time to destroy in due course of time, but for the time being they should wait and do penance. So off they went, those 11 Rudras, and they went to this place mentioned here in the purport as Mahakala Dham. That is the lowest part of Shiva Loka, or the abode of these different forms of Shiva. So now we have Shambhu, we have Lord Shiva or Rudra, plus these 11 Rudras, and we have three abodes really. Then Srila Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita, let's just see. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada talks about another form of Lord Shiva, who is even higher. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 6, verse 79, purport. Prabhupada says, in the Vayu Purana, there is a description of Sadashiva in one of the Vaikuntha planets. That Sadashiva is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form for pastimes. It is said that Sadashiva, Lord Shambhu, is an expansion from the Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha planets, Lord Vishnu. And that his consort, Mahamaya, is an expansion of Rama Devi, or Lakshmi. So it appears then that Lord Shiva's abode extends from, like, the lower parts of Vaikuntha, through into the material world, through the causal ocean, into the material worlds, and there are two parts within the material world. One is Kailas, the abode of Shiva, the popular demigod, and the other is this Mahakala Dham, which is the place of the 11 Rudras. So how does all that sound? Does that sound acceptable? or at least can we follow that? Lord Shiva is a little difficult to follow, I mean to understand, so if you don't totally follow it, don't worry too much, but that's the basic idea. Yeah, we were just reading Prabhupada's purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 6, verse 79. In the Vayu Purana, there is a description of Sadashiva in one of the Vaikuntha planets. That Sadashiva is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form for pastimes. It is said that Lord Shambhu is an expansion from the Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha planets. And that his consort Mahamaya is an expansion of Ramadevi. Of course, we already read about Shambhu and Mahamaya and their joining together and reproducing. So now we have four. Am I right? Four? We have Sadashiva in Vaikuntha, who's a form of Krishna for pastimes. He's a form of Lord Vishnu. Then we have Shambhu. Then we have Lord Shiva, who's the popular demigod worshipped by Hindu people and a member of the Trinity, they call it sometimes, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And then we have the Rudras, expanded from that form of Shiva, and they are in Mahakala Dham. Mahakala means the great time, when time will come to an end, or when the end of the universe, the time for the end of the universe will come, then those Rudras will begin the process of destruction. So we have four levels of forms or manifestations of Lord Shiva. Yeah. So generally speaking, actually in a couple of verses, there is going to be a discussion about Lord Shiva as such, Shambhu. And the basic idea about Lord Shambhu is that he's kind of in between. He's not exactly Vishnu, generally. And he's not one of the living entities. He's in between. He's in his own category. He is his own tattva. They're different tattvas, different types of living entities. Shakti tattva means Radharani and her expansion. Vishnu tattva, Krishna and his expansion. Jiva tattva, that's us. Then there's Shiva tattva. All these other tattvas have numerous members. This Shiva tattva has one member. Or maybe four members, if you like. But anyway, it's a special, very special category. Therefore, in this verse, 43, it's described that the abode of Lord Shiva, because here we're talking about abodes, the abode of Lord Shiva is not in the material world. But it is not exactly in Vaikuntha. It's in between. There's an interesting description in Brihad Bhagavatamrita of how Gopakumar, who is visiting different abodes on his way back to Godhead, he goes from Brahmaloka, he goes to Shivaloka. When he goes from Brahmaloka to Shivaloka, he passes through the coverings of the material universe, through the Brahmajyoti, and comes out on the other side of the Brahmajyoti and meets Lord Shiva and his associates in his abode, Shiva Loka. And there, Lord Shiva's associates are worshipping Lord Shiva by saying that he is worshipped by materialistic people and liberated souls. People, at least, who are Brahman realize. So in other words, his abode, the higher levels of his abode, are beyond the Brahmajyoti. But to exactly put it, you know, all in a totally coherent way is not so easy. So let us just leave it at that for the time being. Then there's Haridam, the Vaikuntha region, and above that is Goloka. So then in text 44, actually in texts 44, 45, and 46.